Greetings in the Lord Jesus. It's good to be back again. Seems like it's been a little while. I think we've been away 4 Sundays total. Seems at least that long. And the last couple weeks have been a little, however we want to say it, with grandmother's passing and ordination work and so on. Well, anyway, we are here. And thank you all for supporting us, praying for us. We know you are, and thank you for those evidences. All right. One membership item here. Millie and Elsie Miller would like to move their membership here. And we have a church letter from Living Hope Conservative Mennonite Church in Belleville, Ohio, recommending them for membership with us. So, next time I'm here, or next time we're all here anyway, we'll take care of receiving them, Lord willing. All right, you can turn with me to Romans chapter 15. I'm going to start there with my title from there. Actually, not going to do much else there than get a title, but so here at the end of the letter, Paul's wrapping up some things, and tells them why he wrote to them, partly, I guess, is what's going on right here. Romans 15:14. And I myself am persuaded of you, my brethren, that you also are full of goodness, filled with all knowledge, able also to admonish one another. Nevertheless, brethren, I've written the more boldly unto you, in some sort, as putting you in mind because of the grace that is given to me of God, and so on. Because I know that you are good people. I guess we could say it that way. You have knowledge. You're able to admonish each other. And yet, I wrote to you to admonish you too anyway. Seems to be the point. And so the title this morning is Able to Admonish. Able to Admonish. Well, this word admonish here means to put in mind, to admonish, to warn, to exhort. It's used in the New Testament and some other places. I'll just give you a couple references here. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. 1 Corinthians 10, you have those examples from the Old Testament, and Paul says these things were written for our admonition. I think the idea of admonish in the New Testament is pretty closely related to the word instruction back in Proverbs, which we'll look at that after a while along the way, which is translated sometimes chastisement, or at least once chastisement, and a couple times correction. So we're thinking about able to admonish, to exhort, to warn, to help. Okay, Acts 20:31, Paul talking to the elders from Ephesus. I ceased not to warn everyone night and day with tears. Same word. 1 Corinthians 4:14, I write not these things to shame you, but as my beloved sons, I warn you, I admonish you. And in Titus, talking to Titus about disciplining heretics, a man that is an heretic after the first and second admonition, reject, after the second time you warn him. So, able to admonish. What are we looking at? Well, you know what man's first question was? Am I my brother's keeper? Well, am I? Yes, I am, at least to some degree. And so, at times, we might need to admonish each other. We are responsible to be one anothering, admonish one another, is one of those. Well, let me just mention the others because I think they're important. And the better we do the others, the better we can be at admonishing. We are to love one another, exhort one another, be kind one to another, forgive one another, greet one another, speak not evil one of another, encourage one another, grudge not one another. Edify one another, build each other up, prefer one another, confess to one another, care for one another, forbear one another, receive one another, consider one another, comfort one another, use hospitality toward one another. I think I went back to Simon Schrock's book and copied them out of there. But anyway, we are members one of another, and we're to be one anothering and admonishing, warning, helping is part of it. I am my brother's keeper. I am responsible for him. He is responsible for me too, by the way. And we want to seek his good. And this applies to sisters too. I think I use male pronouns all the way through. Just apply it both sides of the house to sisters too, by the way. I'm not going to say his or her every time I say it. So, all right. Sisters too, not just my brothers. So, we're familiar with Matthew 18:15. Moreover, if thy brother trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. That's the purpose for admonishing each other, to gain your brother or your sister. 2 Thessalonians, Paul says this, and if any man obey not our word by this epistle, note that man and have no company with him. Change the way you relate to him, that he may be ashamed. Yet count him not as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. And we often, well, I don't know if we often do or not, but I think about it pretty often, this Matthew 18 principle, go to your brother yourself. The principle there is, at least this is one way I interpret it pretty often, take care of it on the lowest possible level. You don't run to the preacher. If your brother offends you, you run to him. You don't involve somebody else. You don't go talk to anyone else. You talk to him. And we use that quite a bit in church work. We don't, JP and me and John and Nathan come and see you one day because of a problem. Just one might do it if it was necessary to start with. I don't know that we have any of those kind right now or need them anytime soon, but don't. You start at the lower level. And the lowest level is brother to brother, sister to sister. On your level, and I'm not raising us up, by the way. I think you know what I mean. Why involve more than necessary? All right, Galatians chapter 1. I'd like to go there. Chapter 5. Chapter 6, we'll get there. Galatians chapter 6, verse 1. Familiar little passage, want to read verses 1 to 5 and just look at them a little bit, and then we'll talk about admonishing each other. So, brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something, when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For every man shall bear his own burden. All right. So if a man be overtaken in a fault, the word here means a sideslip, a lapse. It's not necessarily a willful sin. It could be, I think, a fall. Well, other ways it's translated, fall, fault, offense, sin, trespass. So if your brother falls into something that you think needs help, you which are spiritual, you are led by the Holy Spirit, who are filled with the Spirit, not living according to the flesh. Is that the preacher? Well, we hope they're spiritual. But we hope some more of the rest of us are too, by the way. It doesn't mean the leadership necessarily. It does imply that there are people in the church who have the ability to do it. They are spiritual people. And if any man have not the Spirit of God, he's none of his. So that doesn't leave very many of us out. Well, okay, you which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness. Restore. That word is used of mending nets, to fit or outfit, to equip fully. In the Greek classics, it's used of setting bones. Restore such an one. Do it in the spirit of meekness. And probably that next phrase enlarges it some, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. You can't go do it with an attitude of superiority, an attitude that I'm going to fix this brother or sister or whatever. You have to carefully consider your own motives, your own heart, make sure that it's love that motivates you and not something else. You have to realize that you too are prone to fall, that it could just as easily be you that has a problem that somebody needs to come talk to about. And it has been, and it will be in the future, probably. You have to go with studied love and gentleness and carefulness, because we know these things cause pain sometimes. They will cause pain. They can. You do it. Verse 2, to bear one another's burdens. Bear? Okay, well, that's the idea of carrying. Could be the idea of enduring, the way Jesus bore his cross. Same word. Bearing one another's burdens. The word here is overburdens. Help them to carry it. You love your brother and sister. You see him struggling along. You step alongside and try to help. Get involved. Make his burdens your burden. You take some responsibility to help. That's not limited to times when your brother or sister has a fault. It better not be, or it's not going to work the best this time. It's other times. You know, last Sunday, a little harder to handle the singing Sunday morning. We had the communion and singing during the foot washing time, and I chose one song that I wanted to sing pretty badly. I knew it was a little dangerous, but you know, during it, my wife got up and went out. She just couldn't quite handle it. And she told me later, well, it wasn't long until she had three other sisters down there. They were helping bear her burden. They wanted to make sure she was all right. And you couldn't blame them. Yes, I mean, last week was an emotional time. And she's still not singing, by the way, if you noticed. And that's okay. I know how it is. There are times where it's better just to start singing. It doesn't work. I had some of that last Sunday, too, actually. So. But bear one another's burdens all the time. This is not the time to start bearing each other's burdens. It ought to be a way of life. And any burdens, not just this kind of burden. Well, verse 3. I think verse 3 probably harks back to considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Because if anybody thinks he is something, he's really nothing at all. My brother sinned. I'm spiritual. I better get over there and straighten him out. Well, if that's the way you feel about it, you're not ready to go. You should not go. The person who thinks that deceives himself. Says it real plainly there. We're brothers and sisters. We in honor prefer one another. We don't look down on each other. We don't feel like we're better than someone else or we've got it together better than they do. And yes, sometimes a brother or sister may really be struggling, and sometimes we might think, well, they ought to be able to get it together, but we forget. We forget that we fall too, and that we struggle too. I don't know, maybe some of you don't. I don't know, I have met people, I have seen people, I wonder, do they ever have struggles? But I do, and I have, and sometimes they've been pretty big. And somehow I can't go thinking, well, I'm good or I'm better because I'm helping him. No, I'm coming along beside as a servant. I'm no better than he is, and I may not be able to help either. I don't know. So verse 4, I think continues the same idea. Let every man prove his own work. Check out your own self. Make sure that you're what you're supposed to be. Test yourself. Carefully scrutinize and test your own life and your own attitudes, especially in relation to this right now, whatever it is, because it's at a time like this that you need to check it out especially. Don't go around looking at other people testing or proving their lives. You go around keeping an eye on yourself. Don't compare yourself with others. Focus on becoming like Christ himself. And then you have something to rejoice about in yourself. Because, well, okay, isn't that interesting the way it says it here? He shall have rejoicing in himself. It could almost sound like be proud, doesn't it? Well, it doesn't mean that, I'm pretty sure. Not in another. I can rejoice because the Lord showed me something in me and I got it taken care of, instead of rejoicing because I get a chance to help somebody else get straightened out. I don't know what all's meant there, but that's some of what I thought about. And so, verse 5 just reminds us, for every man shall bear his own burden. And here it's just the regular burden. And looking at it in a couple other versions, I realized, well, that's future tense. I just always sort of assumed it meant every man has to bear his own burden now. But there might be a bit of judgment there, too. Every man shall bear his own burden. He will, in the future, bear his burden. He'll have to bear what he did in his life. And so be careful if you think you need to admonish a brother or sister. It involves you in ways you might not have thought of just yet. It's a warning for us. All right, we want to talk about admonishing someone, and then we want to talk about receiving admonition. Of course, there are, all right, first, admonishing someone else. There are, of course, different levels of admonishing. There's the Matthew 18 level where a brother sins against you, and that could eventually go to the church, or a brother is sinning openly or whatever. There's maybe a concern where maybe you heard something about a brother and you could just go and say, you know, I heard this. You want to clear it up for me? Or I hope it's not true, and I wanted to come talk to you and find out what you had to say. Or I noticed you haven't been at church for 6 weeks. I said I'd better come and talk to you, find out what's up. That'd be pretty long. Maybe don't wait that long. even church standards or maybe some practices that seem dangerous. Sometimes a word to the wise is sufficient and in order. So a brother or sister sins, who's responsible to talk to them? Well, you, who are spiritual. That doesn't necessarily mean the leaders. They might not know it, and they don't need to know it. If you know it, it's your job. You have the Holy Spirit too. You're a member of the body. Any member of the body ought to be able to admonish another. If you know about it, then you should be the one to do it. Why involve anyone else? Come back to that Matthew 18 principle. Do it at the least involved level. Call it the lowest level if you want to, but that's the idea. The least involved might be another way to say it. Spiritual, you who are spiritual, also speaks about the way you're to go about it, which I've talked about that a little, and I'll talk some more yet. Seek God's direction, pray, ask for the Spirit's infilling and help. There's that verse that says, if you ask, God will give you his Spirit, so you'd better ask. There's that verse that says, if you ask for wisdom, God will give it, so you'd better ask, especially at a time like this. Look at the situation through the Spirit's way of looking at it. That is through the eyes of love. We're part of a brotherhood. We love each other. And just to remind us, go back to 1 Corinthians 13 and look at some of those phrases in verses 4 to 7. So, well, you could start with suffer it long. Love suffers long, puts up with a lot. It's kind. No matter what it does, it's kind. Doesn't envy. It's not proud, not rash. Charity vaunteth. My margin says it's not rash. It's not quick. It's not puffed up. Seeketh not her own. There in verse 5. Am I self-seeking in any way? I mean, after all, maybe he did something that hurt me. And that can make it a little too easy to go sometimes. When it's me that's hurt. Is not easily provoked. Am I angry because he did me wrong? Am I being overcritical? Am I lacking in forbearance? Thinketh no evil. Keeps no record of wrong, I think is the way some of the versions put it. Am I imagining things? Am I constructing a case based on something I used to know or thought I used to know about this person? Rejoiceth not in iniquity but in the truth. Am I seeking for truth? Rejoicing that I have a chance to address the brother myself. Am I bearing all things, believing all things, hoping for the best, forbearing as I should, not overreacting? Am I hoping that I'm wrong even, hoping that there's a good explanation? Often there is, by the way. Am I sincerely hoping and praying for a good response and clearing it up even if it turns out that, hey, I'm just wrong and misunderstood, which happens more than we might think, by the way. That's one reason you go to the brother yourself. Well, some practical things. Search yourself. Considering yourself, Paul said. You must go with right attitudes. You must go with right attitudes. And if you've been faithfully one anothering, and a lot of these other areas that I read through a while ago, you're in a much better position to go one another this way. If you haven't, well, then there's a lack of relationship and it's going to be more difficult. Be motivated by love. Let love motivate you. Let love subdue you. Meekness. In the spirit of meekness. Gentleness. Understanding. I've fallen too. I'm not perfect. I don't know it all. I might not know it this time. Just think I do. Express appreciation somewhere along the way. I have mixed feelings about this one. I knew a brother one time who I could tell when he was getting ready to say something because he always began by expressing appreciation and I wondered, what's coming? Which was okay. I loved him anyway. But if you can't find something to appreciate about the brother, the sister, you're probably not ready to go anyway. And maybe it's not quite best to start it, but somewhere along the way, express it anyway. It should not be easy for you to go to someone, not if it's anything serious at all. And he should know that it's not easy. This is going to hurt. You know it's going to hurt. You shouldn't like to hurt people. And, well, yeah, I can't understand the way I've seen some people do it. Why would you do it that way? I mean, if you need to talk to somebody about a concern, be gentle. If you want a good response, act like it. Well, okay. It's true. There are a few people out there that would much prefer you just come to them and be straightforward and hit them over the head with it. There are a few like that. Kind of crazy, but I mean, They're few and far between. I could probably name one, but anyway, for the most part, don't do it that way. You practice the golden rule. Do you like to be hurt? If someone comes to you, how do you want it done? Don't accuse. Even if you saw it with your very own eyes, don't be accusatory. Say it and then stop. And believe it or not, things that you saw with your very own eyes, you can still be wrong. You can. I've been, and I know some others that have been. So you say, how can that be? Well, I don't know exactly, but it's still true. Don't be too confident that you know what's going on. There are always two sides to a story, at least two sides. And there could be mitigating factors, things that you have no idea about, that would change your understanding of it quite a bit. There often are, I think I'd be safe in saying there usually are. So in church leadership, we often hear things about people, and somebody will tell us, this brother did that. Well, it's obviously wrong. And if what they're saying is true, obviously there's a problem. But to go and speak to the other person always sheds light on it. And you know what? It almost always changes how we view it. Because, and it's going to be that way when it's me looking at someone else too. And when I go to them, I need to be open to hearing what they have to say and to changing and accepting what they have to say and learning from it. I heard this once, and it makes a lot of sense to me. Remember that what people do makes perfect sense to them. Some of us looking on sometimes wonder, what in the world did he do that for? But if you would just go and ask him, most of the time he was doing something that made perfect sense from his point of view. Go find out what it was. Now, yes, there are some times when we do stupid things and we have no good excuse for it and we know it. But that's, in general, there's a reason people do what they do. And it may not be the one we assign to them. Probably isn't. And if it's something worth troubling yourself about, go find out what it was. You'll learn something. So when you go, be willing to listen. If you're going to bear his burden, you need to understand him. You need to hear him out. If you don't, he's going to figure that you don't really care. And he'll be right. Because if you don't care enough to hear what he has to say, you're not ready to go talk to him yet. That's just all there is to it. Remember verse 3 there in Galatians 6. You're nothing. You're only his servant. You're only there to serve, to help carry the load. Well, go to restore, be as kind as possible, but don't skirt the issue. Help him take care of it. If it's truly necessary, something needs to be taken care of. If it requires further action on his part, be willing to help do it. If it requires that he goes, talks to somebody, and he would be glad to have you along, go along. Carry that burden. Don't quench the smoking flax. Don't break the bruised reed. Go to strengthen someone, not to tear them down. Determine not to do or say anything that will offend him or to keep him from doing what's right. You are responsible to carry your burden in a way that helps him carry his. And part of your burden is the way you relate. And yes, we can say, well, there's some people, no matter how you do it, it's not going to work. Well, that's true. Sometimes it is. That is sometimes true. But Nevertheless, you must do it in the best way possible. That's your burden. If you're talking to someone, don't insist on immediate response or immediate clearing. How often have you had to have some time to mull it over and think about it and let the Lord clear it up in your own brain as to what he's trying to say to you? It takes time sometimes. And so don't insist on immediate response. Follow that golden rule. Give them time too. And you may just need to say what you have to say and leave it. And let the Spirit take care of it from there. We aren't called to fix each other. Sometimes maybe, but fix. That's just not even good terminology, is it? Okay. In a general way, don't make demands. You must do this and this to clear this up. That's not our call either, for the most part. I saw it. I know it. I know what you need to do. Oh, really? Back up. Read Galatians 6, 1 to 5 again. And be a bit more careful in how you come across. It's true. Sometimes in the case of known sins, it just simply has to be dealt with. That's right. But that's probably more often a case for the church to deal with. But in general, we need to be willing to be satisfied with their response, even if it doesn't quite reach where we wish it would. Be glad for what we get. If they respond with enough openness to the Lord, the rest will come. To his own master, he's responsible, not to you. I don't have the reference for that, but anyway, it's there somewhere. So anyway, go to gain your brother, tread softly, carefully, follow the golden rule. Those are the summarizing points on it. All right, receiving admonition. Let's go back to Proverbs 3 real quickly. When someone comes to you, and I want to read verse 11 here. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. So this is the Lord doing the chastening. That's the word that throughout Proverbs is translated most of the time, instruction. This is the only time it's chastening, actually. It's translated correction, I think, 4 times in Proverbs. An interesting word. Sometimes when you have time, look it up in your Power Bible CD or in your Strong's or whatever and check it out. I'll give you some of them here. Proverbs 8:33, hear instruction and be wise and refuse it not. Want to be wise? Okay. 10:17, he is in the way of life that keepeth instruction. But he that refuseth reproof, erreth, I guess is proper. Anyway, 13:18, poverty and shame shall be to him that refuses instruction, but he that regards reproof shall be honored. 15:10, correction is grievous unto him that forsaketh the way, and he that hateth reproof shall die. 15:32, he that refuseth instruction despises his own soul, but he that hears reproof gets understanding. 19:20, hear counsel, receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in thy latter end. So, I know the Lord, I love the Lord, I want to grow, I want to hear what my brother has to say to me. Even if it hurts a little, I want to receive instruction. I want to be wise. I don't want to be like those in Zechariah. They refused to hearken and pulled away the shoulder and stopped their ears that they would not hear. And you get the picture of a, well, I got the picture of a t- teenager that I knew once who would pull his shoulder away if somebody tried to lay their hand on your shoulder and talk to you. Don't be like that. Be ready to hear. Make some determinations before it ever happens. Determine to profit from it. Determine not to react unchristlike. Determine to love the person who comes no matter what. Determine not to allow yourself to become angry or upset toward him. Determine not to think that he's nitpicky and unfair. You've never been nitpicky or unfair, have you? It happens. Sure it does. But don't allow that to get in here and start your churning going. You can't let that in there. It may be that he is nitpicky and unfair, but that's not the way you're going to profit from it by thinking about it, okay? All right. There's going to be a certain initial shock or tension that comes when you realize, oh, he's coming to me with a concern. At least there is for me. And I sort of man up and get ready because I've made some determinations. These are the determinations I make. And yes, it takes a little self-control and whatever. But listen to him. Really? Listen. Try to understand. Try to apply his concern and figure out if there's truth in it. And often it may not sink in right away. It might take a little. You might think, well, he's just missing it completely, but promise to give it consideration anyway. And especially if he comes in a way that's not very nice, if he doesn't follow all these instructions I've give you a while ago, especially if it's a little nasty, you may not be in any shape to try to give it consideration right at that point. Make it plain that you'll not ignore it, that you'll give it serious thought even then. Don't be defensive. If there's a good explanation that'll clear it up, well, explain it. And it may be that he won't think your explanation is as good as you do. Who knows? That's not terribly unusual. But don't make excuses for anything that's not up to par. If you failed, say so. And even if you think that your explanation should have taken care of, don't forget that his perception was still his perception. And it may have some validity. We are responsible at least a little bit, to how people see us also. Life is difficult, isn't it? But we have to think about that. Why did he see that in me? And it might be that we know, well, he has a problem with us anyway, and we can blame it sort of on that. But nevertheless, give it some consideration. Don't strike back. His faults have nothing to do with your faults. He's talking to you about yours. They're the ones you should be focusing on. And yes, depending how someone comes, you could up and say, yes, but you're just not even acting right now, coming to me like this. Well, so what? Big whoop. Take care of you. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Okay. You claim to be a Christian. He came to help you. Let him help you. Let him bear your load. Thank him for coming. Show love and appreciation. Even if he's wrong, even if he has bad attitudes, you can thank him. After all, he came and talked to you, not to someone else. And that's worthy of thanks. And very likely, you can learn something from what he had to say. Sometimes it won't be what he thought you should have learned. But anyway, you can learn from it. So, encourage him. Bless him, edify him, especially if he came in a good way. A good result, a good response is needed to build a relationship. And if he's a brother in the church, sister in the church, you want to build relationship. So, And if there is a problem, deal with it immediately, as soon as possible. When you realize he's right, that you are some way at fault, confess it. May not be what you feel you need to confess may not match what he thought you should. That's okay. You have to be truthful to what truth is too. But let him know you'll do whatever is necessary to clear it up. Well, if you feel their concern was completely unfounded, well, first off, don't feel that way, at least not initially, because that kind of just puts a wall in and keeps you from actually considering it like you should. They still felt strongly enough to come. You owe it your serious consideration. Pray about it. The Lord may be using them to speak to you. Maybe you think it's just a difference of opinion or a difference of practice. Could be. Still, consider it. There still might be a change in order. Conscience, I say, not thine own, but of the other. So sometimes we change because of someone else's conscience. And again, the method and the attitude of the messenger doesn't really matter. Hear the message. Probably there will seldom be a time when someone comes to you with a concern, an accusation, or whatever, that you will be able to say, I'm 100% clear in the matter. Usually if you try, you can find something wrong with yourself. We're not perfect, and we need to constantly keep that in mind and be open at least to hearing and looking at ourselves. Even if everything they do in coming to you seems to be done wrong. But I like what Paul said, and I myself am persuaded of you, my brethren, that you also are full of goodness, filled with knowledge, able also to admonish one another. I think I said it here once, and I'll say it again, by the way. I'm not so sure we ought to go around all the time thinking, well, I need to use Matthew 18 with that brother. I think we ought to just live so that we are exhorting, helping, admonishing one another daily, just part of life, and get that principle that if there is a friction, a struggle, or whatever, you take care of it at the least involved level. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another. Let's have a song.